Welcome back to Word Up with Dani Katz. I am your host, Dani Katz. I am an author, journalist, and a quantum languaging coach and consultant. What that means is that I teach people how language programs consciousness, how language programs reality at large, and how to transform reality and evolve our consciousness with language. I've also been known to cultivate and share an opinion or two or 12 about culture and consciousness and how they are evolving, devolving, and being manipulated by the powers that were. Here at Word Up, we are devoted to fostering critical thinking while supporting you in becoming your most authentic, empowered, liberated, realized, amazing version of yourself. Our every show aims to expand your consciousness, raise your frequency, sharpen your critical thinking skills, and make you giggle. And think. Given the radical uptick in censorship over the past few years, combined with the complete co-opting slash decimation of my own personal industry, journalism, I started Word Up to have a free speech-friendly platform in which to engage exploratory, solutions-based conversations with visionaries, mystics, original thinkers, and rebel badasses who are helping to make the world more wonderful. The first half of my interviews run between 30 to 90 minutes and are always posted here for free public listening. The second halves are reserved for paid supporters on my Patreon and my Locals platforms, where for as little as $5 a month, you can access all of my second half conversations along with oodles of other bonus content and opportunities to drop in with me, to drop in with our High Vibe tribe, and lots of other awesome things. In addition to interviews, Word Up also features quantum languaging upgrades, planetary service announcements, and propaganda analysis, which I call Spot the Propaganda. Thank you so much for tuning in and for sharing your sacred attention with me and our High Vibe tribe of change makers. Be sure to click that subscribe button so you can stay abreast of our every episode. Thank you for also clicking the like button, for sharing far and wide, and for leaving some kind words as a review as you are authentically inspired. As well, if you are gleaning any value whatsoever from these shows, consider supporting me on Locals and or Patreon. And as you are wanting to learn more about my quantum languaging coaching and consulting services or nab copies of my books, find me on DaniKatz.com as well as on quantumlanguaging.com. Okay, I think that's it for our housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy this episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Hey, superstars, welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Today I am joined by me because we are solo podcasting. Today's gonna be a bit of a cornucopia. I have a few things to go over. We are gonna go deep into a couple language of betterarchy precepts based on some screenshots I will be sharing with us, and we're gonna warm up. We're gonna ease our way into it because there's no rush. I'm enjoying a special beverage and I'm gonna take my time with this one and trust that you will enjoy the relaxed pace. All right, I made a list of the order in which we're going today. And I wanna start off with a reminder to all my fellow truthers out there, everyone who does their own research, who's tracking what's going on, what's really going on in the Sham Show, because I was just listening to the most recent episode of Donut Factory, and he had a few different guests on. He had like a panel, and one of the guys in the panel, and I'm not sure if this was like because of the group dynamic or it doesn't even matter, because I hear this from so many people who are
walking the path of truth, doing their own research, and keeping apprised of what's going on, is this definitive, like, it's definitely going to happen kind of disaster baiting. And I see it as there's kind of a social cachet to tracking the sham show, to knowing the plans that the powers that were are either going to try to attempt to pull off or thinking about attempting to pull off. And we'll come back to that in a second. But it goes along the lines of, you know, I saw this during COVID where it was like, yeah, and then they're going to mandate vaccines and then they're going to try to push everyone to vaccine passports. This was in 2020. And I was like, guys, wait a minute. We know what they would like to do, what they would like to pull off, but how about we remove our consent and from their plans, from their hideous enslavement scenario, and instead use our thoughts and our words to program our reality in a different direction. Alas, my pleas fell on deaf ears, and I watched my community disasturbate themselves into a worst case scenario. And I'm watching this happen now. Now, I'm not, in no way, shape, or form am I giving my power away to this, but let us remember how the universal reality creation forces work, right? We have a morphogenetic field. Some people call it the morphic field. Some people call it the quantum field. I'm specifically talking about the singular field of energy that, I'm going to say, surrounds our planet. But does it really surround our planet in like a 3D kind of wrap? I don't really know. I haven't left the planet. I don't know that I have the appropriate multidimensional sensory mechanisms to be able to tell. But I always envision it like, you know, rainbows or arcs covering the planet. But there is one singular morphogenetic field that programs our reality. And the way that that works is our every word, thought, and deed programs that morphogenetic field. The morphogenetic field takes what it's being programmed with the most, right? So if the bulk of humanity is programming the morphogenetic field with fear, with conflict, with division, with scarcity, then that morphogenetic field is going to deliver a reality construct that is shaped by those energies, right? It's all about frequency, right? The frequencies that we program into the morphogenetic field are the same frequencies it's going to use to give us our collective reality construct, right? So we see this, I mean, there are just so many realms in which we see this, but I see this in terms of the truthers forgetting how powerful we are, forgetting how powerful our words, thoughts, and deeds are, dropping the ball, and then languaging the plans of, you know, the powers that were, or the deep state, or, you know, the shadowy lizards behind the scenes. And instead of speaking about them as unlikely potentialities, as plans that will not likely be successful, as ridiculous notions for what they would like to do with humanity, with society, were we to cede our agency and our authority to them. But instead of referring to them in that way, it's like, oh, and then, you know, they're gonna burn down all of the urban neighborhoods to push us into the cities where we're gonna, you know, be forced to get on the central bank digital currency, or else we're not gonna be able to trade. And it's like, why are we giving our confidence and lending legitimacy to their ridiculous enslavement plans, right? So what I'm encouraging us to do is to withdraw our consent. Sure, we might know what they would like to do. We might know what they might even be trying to do, but let's not go to the cuckoo place and give them our confidence and program our reality with their enslavement plans for them, because that is what everyone is doing. I saw this happening with, you know, a lot of the people around the abortion issue. So good. The way this went down was for years, I saw so many people freaking out. They're going to take away Roe. They're going to take away Roe. They're going to take away Roe. And it's like, well, look at what scenario you programmed into the reality construct you consented to, you yourself helped to bring in by affirming a reality construct that you really didn't want. Although sometimes I question that, right? Because so many people get such a sense of purpose from their oppositional positioning. Like, I even see this around the COVID stuff, and a lot of people who were on the front lines, you know, 2020, 2021, like kind of loving the COVID op and kind of now being dependent upon it because it puts them on the circuit. It brings them attention. It brings them an audience. Like, let's keep this going, right? So there's like a quantum entanglement with this thing that they allegedly don't want, because their opposition to that thing is giving them fame, is giving them money, is giving them impact, is giving them attention, like all of those things. So, you know, I always wonder that with like a lot of the kind of pro-choice, but you know, I talk about this in the book in the anti section, where it's like, when we define ourselves in an oppositional capacity, we need whatever we're opposing to have a mission, to have existential validity, right? So then we quantum entangle ourselves. But I don't really think that's what's going on, like with the guys I saw in Donut, or even with the friends in my life. I think it's just like a combination of unconsciousness, of laziness. And again, there is a certain like zing, like certain social cachet. If I'm at a party and I'm like, yeah, and they're going to do this crummy thing and this crummy thing and this crummy thing. I mean, I used to do that in my 20s when I was producing the news for KPFK. It's such a like Enneagram 5 shadowy social strategy to like come into a party and just, I would just bum everyone out with like all of the terrible news that was going on in the world. But for me, and what I was running was like, oh, okay, this is giving me confidence. This is like giving my ego a boost because I have more knowledge than everyone else. But let us be mindful, even if, you know, we are doing our due diligence and we are tracking what's going on and we might be seeing it before most people, let's not program these potentialities into actual realized existence by using definitive positive languaging that would otherwise program that morphogenetic field to give us a collective reality construct reflective of said enslavement mechanisms, right? It's not like the universal reality creation forces are going, I feel like enslavement and a cashless society is not going to be good for the humans, so I'm going to ignore their consistent programming of the reality construct in this direction because it's not good for them. Like, that's not how it works. This is a realm of free will in this sense. We get to choose what we're programming this reality construct with. And the more of us that are choosing to program this reality construct with freedom, with empowerment, with abundance, with peace, then the more likely it is that that is how our reality construct will shape itself. So, really quick reminder to not use definitive positive languaging when referencing the adorable, ridiculous, completely untenable plans of those who seek to enslave / destroy us. Okay, section one done. Pausing for a sip. For those watching with your eyes, I didn't mean to be so pink. It just sort of happened, and I'm not overthinking it. I'm still transmuting some historic resistance to the solo podcast, to staring into a green light for upwards of an hour and an hour and a half, and trust that it's landing without any sort of real feedback. And so I'm making it as easy on myself as possible by being comfortable and drinking yummy beverage. I do have a beverage fetish, especially when I road trip. It's all structured around the special beverages. It's a nice little reward program I've set up for myself. Okay, next. There is, I've lived in my place for a few years now, and it's been really casual and loose, which is always my preference of like, let's just respect one another and handle ourselves like with dignity and honor. But so that went really well without a lease. And then I ended up by accident overpaying my rent for a couple months. And my landlord asked, you know what, the story doesn't even matter. The point is that I was asked to sign a lease. And before I moved into the place that I'm in now, I was on the fence between this place and another place in town. And the reason why I turned down the other place was because of a single section in the lease that was a total deal breaker for me. And when I brought it up to the potential landlord, she wasn't willing to take it out. And she's like, it's not a big deal. It's never going to happen. And I will tell you what this is in a second. And I'm like, okay, but I'm not, like, I need to have my own back, and I'm not going to sign something that's completely out of alignment, trusting that it'll never happen. I think it's better, you know, for us to remove this from the lease, or just trust that we'll behave ourselves and not have a lease altogether. So that was the deal breaker in that lease. And then when my landlord presented me with a lease a couple weeks ago, it was in the lease. Of course, I crossed it out, like big red, nope. And he was totally fine with it. I mean, I've lived here for a few years, so we know that like we're a good fit. But I wanna bring our attention to it because as I've learning from other people, it seems like most people don't read their leases. Most people don't read their user agreements. Most people aren't reading like the fine print. This bit me in the ass some not so good ways. And I know that these things are getting slavier and slavier. So, and I'm also learning, like the more I study common law, you know, Brandon Joe Williams' work, or, you know, other sort of realms and paradigms of working with the law that way, they always say like, a contract is an offer and you don't have to accept the offer. And I noticed this in terms of like the larger conversation around us stepping into greater levels of empowerment, agency, and authority is we have every right when someone presents us with a contract to go through it and be like, okay, this is okay, this isn't okay, and ask for adjustments. I think so many of us just assume, especially in the landlord-tenant situation for those who are still renting the way I am, it's such an imbalance of power, right? Especially since Airbnb, but even before that, like with the rental market being what it is, it feels like the landlords have the bulk of the power and we're just like, okay, we'll sign on to whatever you say. And I'm encouraging us to switch that up and reclaim our power. I tend to get tongue-tied at night, which is why it's always my preference to record during the day. And that's just not how it was rolling this week. So there might be a little bit more mouth marbling than usual. We'll see. So one idea I've had before I get to this clause is that we need there to be like a user-maintained Yelp review site for landlords. Here, they ask for our references. They want to see our bank statements. They want our social security number and our driver's license. They run our credit. It's like they get to know everything about us, and then they could be the biggest slumlords in town, but we wouldn't know it because it's like, oh, please pick me. I feel like if we had in all of our, you know, little local communities, a local little website where tenants could post reviews for their landlords, I feel like it would really help even out the balance of power. I had a really scuzzy, horrible, horrible landlord situation right before I moved into this place. It like really rocked me to the core because it was one of those moments where I was realizing evil exists. Like people actually, not everyone is good. Like some people are really gross and disgusting. If there was a landlord review I would have seen the reviews on her and I wouldn't have put myself in the situation, and I would have been able to post a review on her so that no one else got put into the situation that I was put in. So I have talked to a couple web people about it. As you likely know, my plate is cuckoo full, but if this is something that sounds like you could pull off, I think we would all really benefit from it. Okay, let us go to the line in the lease, and I'm gonna go into the issues that make it a deal breaker for me. So I'm gonna share my screen. Attorney's fees. Should it become necessary for the landlord to employ an attorney to enforce any of the conditions or covenants hereof, including the collection of rentals or gaining possession of the premises, the tenant agrees to pay all expenses so incurred, including reasonable attorney's fees. So, what is the issue that I have with this? First and foremost, I am not a litigious person. I think that our legal system in its current state is purely demonic. I want absolutely nothing to do with it. I have been in so many situations where I have been clearly wronged in the eyes of the law and clearly worthy of restitution. And I've had so many people say in various instances, you should sue. And I can't think of anything that I would like to do less. I would rather wash my eyes in ground glass while gargling flaming scorpions than ever go to court for anything. So first and foremost, this is speaking to a paradigm that is never going to work for me. So according to this, I would agree to pay all my landlord's expenses should it become necessary for the landlord to employ an attorney. This is the languaging that is so egregious, in a million years you can never get me to sign anything that says this. Should it become necessary? Who determines that it has become necessary? In my opinion, I don't think it is ever necessary to bring our disgusting demonic legal system into any situation. Nowhere in this clause does it say who determines it becomes necessary. And again, like, it's just such a, it's vague and it's wishy-washy, and it's absolutely protecting the landlord and completely screwing over the tenant. So should it become necessary? Again, who determines it becomes, like, please never sign anything with languaging this vague, because it's only setting ourselves up to be screwed. So should it objectively become necessary for the landlord to sue me? I'm supposed to pay my landlord to sue me? No. So check your leases. Make sure this clause isn't in there. And also, like, I think it's helpful to push back, not to be difficult, not to overcomplicate things, but to snap people out of their own unconscious adherence to this. It's like, I know my landlord just downloaded some random thing from the internet and, like, wasn't paying attention to the specific clauses and didn't care that I was crossing this out. But a lot of us are being screwed by the systems as they are. And a lot of us are getting screwed because we're allowing ourselves to get screwed, right? Because we're dropping the ball on our own inner authority and we're not advocating for ourselves. And this is one of those instances. So, you know, I'm encouraging all of us to get a little more granular when we're signing contracts. Now, I realize that's more difficult with, like, what? Verizon or Comcast or whatever, and that's a completely different monster. I am toying with the idea, and I would love your feedback. Like, please email me or comment on this show wherever you're, you know, on whatever platform you're taking it in. But I'm starting to realize more and more how completely out of integrity it is for me to be using Zoom, using Amazon, using Instagram, using all of these things. And there's one aspect of me that's like, I have to get off. This is horrible. I'm part of the problem. They have the power. I feel super disempowered. There's another aspect of me that's like, that's going to be a pain in the ass. And I don't want to deal. There's another aspect of me that's like, I don't even know what the options are that are going to be better. Like, how do I even get off of this? But I was thinking, if we had a group, if we had a support group for one another to A, share resources, share our alternative platforms. I know people who are having a really hard time, like canceling Audible, deleting their Facebook. Like, we could share tools in how we accomplish that. And then what are the alternative platforms or alternative ways of doing things that are working for us? And how can we hold one another accountable in pulling our business away from these disgusting fascist oligarchs? And I feel like were we to do it together and really support one another through it, we could move the needle. Again, I remind you, in my perspective, from my perspective, the weaponization of customer service is the issue that can really unify us all. And it's one of those issues that we can band together, and were we to vote with our dollars and pull our business away from, say, Zoom, who no longer offers phone support even to their paying customers, if we had a mass exodus, like remember when there was the walk away movement? Regardless of what you think about political parties, if we had a walkaway movement, you know, from Zoom one week, from Instagram another week, in big, giant chunks, we could move that needle. So let me know what you think, if you'd have any interest in doing this with me. And let's move on from this. It's so offensive to me, the should it become necessary. Like, what it reminds me of when I'm, you know, ordering food someplace, and I say, you know, can I just get a side of sliced avocado? No, we can't do that. But you have avocado and guacamole on the menu. Right, but there's no button for it on the computer. It's, to me, it's that same frequency of like this very cowardly hiding behind some imaginary perceived authority as to what should happen. Like, it's not like the landlord saying, oh, I of my own volition am deciding to sue you and invite you or demand that you pay for me to sue you. It's, oh, it became necessary out some nebulous nether region of external authority decided that it was necessary for me to sue you. It's that same like cop out hierarchy bullshit that I'm so excited we're evolving out of. Moving along. Okay. This is a little one. This is a planetary service announcement about how not to schedule, which also leads us into how to schedule. So this planetary service announcement was inspired by an instance of scheduling a meeting earlier this week. It was kind of last minute, and I had a lot on my plate, and the person with whom I was scheduling was available. We were scheduling it for same day. So I said, okay, what windows work for you? And then this person messaged me back with, well, I'm taking so-and-so to soccer practice at such and such a time, and I have a chiropractor appointment at this time, and then I need to be here at this time. This was the text. And I'm like, oh, wow, am I your personal assistant? Is it my job to sift through your busy schedule and figure out your windows availability for you? Now, to be clear, it's not like this person was trying to make my day more complicated, trying to skitz out my nervous system anymore, trying to pile more bricks on top of the overwhelm that I was already running in. And still, that was exactly what that text did. And notice this type of scheduling strategy tends to come from people who, I don't want to say aren't really that busy, because who am I to judge? But there are people who don't have jobs, who don't have like different kind of career obligations throughout the day. It's just like this very lackadaisical, airy, vata, like here's me and my life, you figure it out for us. And it is really rude and really inconsiderate. I'm not a fan of scheduling. I find the act of scheduling is something I'm still learning to, I don't want to say get comfortable with. Basically, I've created boundaries around scheduling because it has historically been stressful and created like low-grade panic feelings in my chest. So I have a hard and fast rule. I never schedule in real time, voice to voice, right? So if I'm talking on the phone and a friend or even a client, mostly clients actually, are like, well, when is good for you next week? I'm like, let me email you some options. Because I know from experience that that type of scheduling for me will lead to like a kind of breathy, like everything rises and I become dysregulated. And I just realize like for whatever reason, you know, and I know what it is. Time space has been elusive for me in this lifetime, especially spatial relations, but time is another one. So when people make it harder to schedule than it needs to be, like it's a trigger for me. It's for sure-sies a trigger for me. So in this instance, it's just unconsciousness, but it's that like type of inconsiderate unconsciousness of like, other people have shit going on too. Other people are busy. Other people are juggling a lot of things. How about you get outside of yourself for a couple seconds to consider the other person and consider like, oh, how can I make it easy on everyone involved for us to schedule? But, you know, I offered the prompt, you know, when are you available to meet? Just capital A-R-E. But when we are scheduling with other people, I find it is helpful to offer 1 to 3 suggestions of when we can meet. If someone throws out a time that doesn't work for us, instead of saying, no, I can't do that, I have Pilates then, and then dropping the conversational ball, one, no one needs to know why you can't make it. Like, we're all busy. Unless it's relevant to the topic at hand, no one cares. So that's not gonna work for me, and then throw out an alternative, right? I liken it to playing catch, right? If we're playing catch and you throw me the ball and I put it down and I just wait for you to throw me another ball, is that gonna be fun for you? No, not at all. So if you throw me a ball and I'm like, oh, thank you, I can't meet at that time, how about another time? When I say, how about another time? That's me throwing the ball back, right? It's keeping everything in motion. Now we have a volley, a back and forth. This also happens, in like social conversations where there's people who like just want to talk about themselves, have no interest in you. I see it in like, you know, of course, online dating or when we're just getting to know someone where it's like, okay, here's something about me. How about you? And then like turning it back with a question so that we could keep that ball in motion. I am always a fan of visuals. Picture it like a game of catch. Someone throws out a time, we catch the ball. That doesn't work for me. How about this one? We throw it back. I'm getting to know you. Oh, cool. You're into engineering. Is that something you studied in school or something that you picked up as a hobby, right? I asked a question. Person says, oh no, I got a master's degree in engineering. Boom. If that's the end of that person's contribution, he's just put the ball down. We don't have an interactive exchange going. If he says, oh, I got a master's degree in engineering, what about you? Did you go to school? Now he's throwing the ball back. Now we have a generative conversation instead of a conversation wherein someone's just taking, and someone's giving, and it's super lopsided and boring for the person who's trying so hard to keep it going. Anyway, same goes with scheduling. Please be considerate and respectful of the other people's time. Just toss out some options as to when you can meet. If nothing works, throw out other options, ask the other person for options. Keep the details as to what you're busy with, why you can't do it, where you're coming from, where you're going after. Please keep those out of the conversation. Like, I think all of us are dealing with enough informational overload that we don't need to be tracking your schedule for you or Jane's schedule for Jane. again, just being respectful and considerate. The human family thanks you. Our human family thanks you. Okay, enough bearing the lead. Let's get to the meat of the matter. The meat of today's matter was inspired by two community posts I spied in two different platforms that were super gross to me. And I have screenshots, so we're gonna go back to a screen share. Worry not, my listeners. I shall be reading to you. This was a post in a local community Telegram group, and it reads, "Urgent need for sheep herders on Diné land." I hope that I'm saying that right. I mean no disrespect to the Diné people. Calling for self-sufficient, I so want to add a hyphen to that, but moving on. Calling for self-sufficient, reliable people to assist a family in maintaining their ancestral lifeways. An elder uncle fell and broke his leg, and now we need help. So I heard this part and I was like, oh, this might be an opportunity for me to be of service in my community. I would love to learn more about sheep herding. Like, I was genuinely entertaining, like, ooh, I am genuinely inspired at this point to respond to this call for support. Then it moves to individuals or small groups must be willing to learn and follow directions, femmes and queers preferred. Can you guess what lost me? I think I probably qualify as a femme. I'm not sure if femme is the same as woman. I mean, I have tits, I have a vagina, I have two X chromosomes. I have a lot of other girly features. So let's assume that I qualify, even though I'm sure I'm getting it wrong and I don't, right? on some level, my intuition knows, like, nah, there's no way it could be that easy, right? But let's just say I qualified. Let's say I was a queer femme. It would be like me going to a restaurant in Alabama in the 50s that said whites only, right? I would qualify. I would, according to that signage, be welcome to eat in that establishment, but do I want to give my money or my business or my support to a business that is propping up bigotry? No, I don't. I don't want any part of that. So even though, again, let's pretend that I qualify, I don't support bigotry. And as soon as I read that, I was like, sorry for your uncle. I mean, what I was really thinking was, screw you, you bigot. Like, you disgusting, gross bigot. How dare you be so bigoted, like, so flagrantly, right? Like, no, not even any self-consciousness about your bigotry. Now, is this the elder uncle's ask? Probably not. And this is an example. And again, I'm filling in a lot of blanks. You can move away from this. I'm filling in a lot of blanks, but my guess is that I wasn't the only one who was turned off by that. If the elder uncle and, you know, this family really needs help, then do you need to put out your bigoted caveat as to who is worthy of helping you when allegedly you're in a desperate situation? Because not only are you asking for immediate help, you're asking for donations, right? So it's so weird to me, the audacity of, like, we're in need and we need legit help, but we're going to be racist, sexist, you know, whateverist bigots, and we're going to turn down help or dissuade help from people who don't meet our ideological bigotry. Like, way to screw over your whole family with your own ideological mind control, confusion, bigotry, separation nonsense, right? so gross. It is so gross to me to see this in my own community. And I will not back down. Like, I'm not a bigot. I don't support bigotry on any level. I don't support apartheid. I don't support these multi-tiered societies where some people are welcome. It's like why Burning Man is so stupid now. VIP bracelets. Oh, some people can go to this camp and some people can't. Fuck that. I'm not interested in any of those playgrounds, right? Where there's, I mean, the first time I went to Lightning in a Bottle and I was speaking, I was teaching a workshop and I saw that there were these bracelets and some people are allowed in places and some people weren't. I ended up leaving early. I was like, ew, it just lends this elitist vibe that I find disgusting. Even if I am in pole position, like when I've been to parties or clubs or concerts and like I'm the VIP or I'm in that section, like it feels a little icky to me. Like, why can't we all just play together? You know, when Tom York formed his first side band, it wasn't the Smile. Was it this Adams for Peace? But it was before they even had a name. And they played their first show in Echo Park, and Flea was on bass, and it was at some little club, and I miraculously got tickets, you know, I won't go into the story that got me there, but when we got there, there were at least like 30, 40 people waiting outside hoping for a way to get in, like hoping someone had a spare ticket or something. And there was a lot of anticipation around this concert, right? It was like Tom York's first side project and he was in our town and it wasn't at a big arena, you know, like everyone was super stoked to be there. And so we're inside, we're waiting for the show to start and the band takes the stage and Tom, I don't know if he said something or signaled, but basically it was like, let everyone in. And it was so awesome that like, everyone who was on the street was allowed to come in, which only made it more fun because we were all there with such like pure excitement in our heart. It was such a like more the merriest, like exponential joy sharing situation. So if it's not going to be a more the merriest, like exponential joy situation, then I personally don't really want to be there. Of course there are exceptions. Like we don't want to let like douchebags into, you know, our gatherings where they're not really on board with our mission or whatnot. But it's just like that separation consciousness, which is really what we're speaking to today. And that is the betterarchical languaging precept that I'm, you know, meandering us into. But this particular one, for the, you know, the family wanting to preserve its ancestral ways, but, you know, femme queer preserve preferred, like how many levels of like the hierarchical identity game are we going to play in one ask? You know, with the Native American thing, it's true. It's true. They were treated horribly. Right? No question. Now, I don't think there's any benefit in harping on it, in lugging the transgressions, the torment of the past into the present moment. And it did tug at my heartstrings when she was like, you know, need help on Dine land, preserve ancestral ways. There's value in that. I do value ancestral ways. I do value the wisdom of the indigenous. It did seem like, yes, this is totally worthy. I'm so glad you put a call out to the community. This is awesome. But then it's like, wait a minute. Or do we really need to preserve ancestral ways? Does your uncle and your family really need help? Or are you posturing around this identity game? Like, what do femmes and queers bring to the sheep herding table that non-femmes and non-queers don't? Like, what kind of help do you need? Are we fucking the sheep? Are we bitching to the sheep about which colors are missing from our flag? Or do you know what I'm, or about representation in the media? Like, is this at all relevant to what the ask really is? And it also made me think like, oh, you don't really need help. This isn't really desperate. Like, because if it was, you wouldn't be perving the potential help that you could actually receive with your stupid, racist, sexist, bigotry nonsense. And then I have another example of this, and then we will get in to the better archical overview upon it. One more screen share. Okay, we're done with our urgent need for sheep herders. I mean, they even go the distance with an exclamation point. And in general, I'm not a fan of the exclamation point because to me as a writer, they feel hysterical and needy and like, keep it together. Like, let's not be a drama queen. But on top of the drama queen, an elder uncle fell and now we need help. And then you're gonna like muddy that with femmes and queers preferred, you goddamn bigot. Ew, gross. Like, what is your allegiance to? Is it to your uncle and your family ways or to your ideology? Let me tell you, the engineers at Tavistock behind your LGBTQ alphabet movement don't care about you, don't care about your uncle, don't care about ancestral ways. They're using everyone who's picking up this rainbow op as their own, as body armor for their divide and conquer nonsense. Like, let it go, people. So this is number two. This was posted on our Santa Fe bulletin board, looking for recommendations for a haircut in the area. The last time I stepped into a salon was a decade ago. Easy. Okay, this isn't really interesting, although she is thinking of a shag mullet with sideburns, which I wish she would consider a different haircut, but that's just my own personal preference. But she's looking for someone who could talk her through style cut options. LGBTQ plus friendly places are definitely a plus. Now, let's just pause right there. Has anyone who is an adult human being in 2024 ever been to a hair salon that wasn't LGBTQ plus friendly? As far as I can remember, that's one of the most LGBTQ friendly places that exists in culture. The hair salon. Most of the hairstylists, the male ones I've been to, are gay. So it's weird to me to make it seem like finding an LGBTQ friendly, I mean, A, haircutter, B, human being, because this is an issue that we don't actually really have in the 21st century, minus the fake engineered trumped up version that our Tavistock lizards created for us. But okay, moving on. LGBTQ plus friendly places are definitely a plus. We live in Santa Fe. Like, this is a super liberal, artsy community. I challenge anyone to find any hair salon slash business in Santa Fe that is not going to be LGBTQ plus friendly. And what does that even mean? Like, are they going to treat everyone equally? Are they not going to have an issue with which hole you prefer to be penetrated in? Because realistically, it's no one's business and no one really cares. Do you need someone who has actual rainbow flags being, you know, flown from their rooftop? Like, what do you need? What determines LGBTQ plus friendly? Is there an emoji? Is there like a secret handshake? Ugh. But then she goes even cuckooer. I'm gonna stick with that. And it would be super duper cool if they were neurodivergent friendly too, if that makes sense. No, it doesn't make sense. What makes sense is that you are a narcissist and that you have been programmed to think that if people don't have the exact same identitarian checks boxes as you do, that they are separate beings who cannot relate to you or your, you know, shag mullet sideburn request, because somehow you think that it is relevant to how your brain works, how you count, who you like to have sex with. Like, it's so off topic and dumb. It's so ridiculous to me that this is where we're at. Like, there's no mention here of like someone who's good at cutting hair. Legit. There's no mention here of someone who's good at like cutting curly hair, cutting fine hair. Like, that is secondary to being LGBTQ plus friendly, which I don't know what that means, because last I checked, there's not really any homophobia happening in Santa Fe? I mean, unless you ask the teachers at my improv school who kicked me out of the school for saying that ballet is faggy while in a sketch and playing a bodybuilder. I mean, I guess if you ask them, I would be representative of the raging homophobia that's happening in Santa Fe. But even so, without having a single conversation with me, they said I was welcome to come back to class after I wrote an apology letter to the entire school, but they didn't feel it was necessary to have a conversation with me to actually gauge any perceived or actual homophobia to determine whether I am actually a threat to the allegedly queer female student who had a stage 12 meltdown, who also happened to be the girlfriend of our heterosexual male teacher. But aside from those nut job, mind-controlled followers, I challenge anyone to find any place in Santa Fe that isn't LGBTQ plus friendly, unless that means they need to have some sort of like, I don't, sticker, code word. I mean, these people are off the rails. So what all of this brings us to is separation consciousness, the downside of identity. I've talked about identity on the last couple shows. And we're gonna tiptoe into it, but I'm just struck by the gross bigotry, the gross separation that it alleges that it infuses into our entire culture, how absolutely damaging this is to our human family and how it's propping up bigotry. But for some reason, this type of bigotry is now lauded in consensus, like retard, confused people reality. It's so weird. So I thought to read to us from the Language of Betterarchy about separation consciousness, because this is such a pitch perfect demonstration of it. I don't think I've read from the separation consciousness section before. If I have, then yay, we get to hear it twice. Okay. This is from Separation, which is the first chapter of part three in the book. Part three delineates the 10 markers of hierarchical languaging, some examples of words and phrases demonstrative of each of the precepts, each one with its own recommended upgrades, thus supporting us in removing our consent from our default hierarchical structure and transforming it and evolving it by way of our languaging. One of the Matrix's primary functions is to keep the populace jacked up on programming that persuades us into believing that we are not, in fact, a singular species of human Earth stewards, but that we are separate beings who cannot be trusted and with whom we must perpetually compete if we are to survive. Alas, this is false. Now, this concept can be a little tricky to grasp because one of the many things we humans have in common is an ego structure that aims to convince us that we are super special, precious snowflakes who are categorically and fundamentally different from everyone else. And in some ways, that's true. We are, each of us, amalgamations of a distinctive set of circumstances, characteristics, biology, belief, experience and perspectives that absolutely differentiate us as individuals. Still, there exists no fundamental value judgment that we can objectively overlay upon our infinite sea of differences. One person might be a blonde-haired, blue-eyed carpenter who likes to cook, knit, and yodel, while another person might be a dark-skinned, dreadlocked anthropologist who studies ballet, small-batch fermentation, and esoteric spirituality. There is no qualitative difference between either of them. One is not better than the other. They are simply different flavors of a singular consciousness expressing itself through a shared humanity. each animated by unique cosmic blueprint, and each equally valuable, precious, and super very special. The ego loves to believe that we are separate and goes the distance to convince us that of and goes the distance to convince us of such fictions in its incessant judging, comparing, and criticizing. But we are not our egos, nor are we the frenetic machinations of our minds. We are a singular unified energy field. I'm going to say that again. We are a singular unified energy field sharing a fleeting individualized experience here on Earth. And so it is that despite all the divisive hierarchical propaganda to the contrary, we humans really, truly are all one. And while the limitations of our 3D monkey minds can make this fundamental axiom challenging to fully grok, it remains a truism that has been confirmed across multiple scientific disciplines, as well as in countless spiritual and mystical traditions the world over. To be clear, this is not New Age kumbaya love and light mumbo jumbo. This is physics. This is unified field theory. This is the scientific understanding that what appeared to be multiple individual people populating our planet are actually temporary concentrations of energy existing in a vast, singular field of energy. Like drops of water in the ocean, we are but concentrated blips making a temporary appearance within a unified field of energy called humanity. But unity doesn't sell malware, insurance, or political ideologies, nor does it serve hierarchy's agenda, which needs us divided and disgruntled so that we will continue to play into its shenanigans. And so it is that hierarchy uses language to brainwash us into conflating individuation with separation. As you are inspired to learn more about me, about my work, my other books, my webinars, my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy course for teens and grownups alike, as you are inspired to learn more about working with me one-on-one in the coaching capacity, or bringing me into your organization as a consultant, you can get all the goods on me at DannyKatz.com. And I'm also encouraging you to sign up for my newsletter while you're there. It's the best way to ensure that we stay in touch, regardless of whatever big tech thought policing shenanigans are happening in the outside world. I'm also reminding you I'm going to be speaking at Music and Sky Festival in California. It's June 20th through June 24th. I am putting my affiliate registration link in the show description. It gets you 10% off. I have pole position timing for my presentation. I'm speaking on the 21st, Friday at 7 p.m. Very honored to have such a great time slot. I will be speaking about the language of betterarchy, specifically dispelling the myth of patriarchy and how you and me and all of us can even out the masculine feminine imbalance with our every word. That does it for the first chunk of this solo podcast. As you are inspired to pick up the last part of today's podcast, you can find that over on both my Locals and my Patreon pages. So join me there at either dannykatz.locals.com or patreon.com/dannykatz, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, oodles of bonus content, and you get to know that you're supporting me in putting out rad stuff. And for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, for sharing, for commenting, and for leaving some kind words as a review, as you are authentically inspired, as you are receiving any value from my podcast, as you dig it, as you listen regularly, consider supporting me on Patreon and or Locals, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half podcast interviews,
as well as oodles of bonus content. Your support really goes a long way in supporting me as a journalist and an independent content creator navigate her way through a really crunchy time in terms of free speech. And as you are wanting to learn more about my work in the world, my books, my products, my quantum languaging coaching and consulting, you can find me at dannykatz.com. as well as quantumlanguaging.com. And if you're not down with a membership patronage platform and want to send me a one-time donation, you can use the Bitcoin link if it actually appears on your podcast listening platform. You could also send me a one-time donation by way of PayPal at dannykatz@pm.me. Or by way of Venmo, where my username is Sadie Bloom. Again, your support means the world and makes a massive, massive difference when it comes to continuing to share this work with the world. Thank you for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that you are omniscopic amazingness and for having a rockin' day. See you next time, superstars.